I would like to resume here, and we have mental health with us right now. They are ready to go. You need to probably move over, and you may introduce yourself. And
everybody gets picked.
Normally, Bob DeLuca would be here, but we have able people in his place today.
Instead. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, you can, right? I'm Betsy Doling. I'm the fiscal coordinator for mental health, and this is...
I'm John Bezerganian. I'm the medical director at the mental health clinic.
And also in the back, we have Becky Kafka, who manages our billing and records departments units. No small feat. So first, I wanted to thank you all for having us and being flexible in the schedule to be able to fit us in when we couldn't come last Thursday. And also, I have a PowerPoint here that was started by Bob and that I've worked on in the last couple of days to sort of make my own. So bear with me while we go through it. And a lot of the information, as you all know, Bob usually has at his fingertips. He pulls right out of his head. So I don't have all of that wealth of information, but I think between John and I, we can answer all of your questions. So first I want to start and our mission. So the mission of the Mental Health Services Department is to meet the needs of the residents, regardless of their ability to pay, in the areas of mental health, developmental disabilities, and chemical dependence. And in order to accomplish our mission, and I'm going to make this a little shorter, I won't just read from this since you have it in front of you, but to plan, develop, and fund programs and services, operate a well-run organization, and to respond to the emerging needs and changing mandates, of which we have many, and to be able to do this in the areas of policy making and functions at all levels, and to pull in information from our board and our staff and our community. I know that Bob has talked about this in the past, but we actually serve two functions as a department. We're a county department, and we provide services directly to the community. And we are also a legal entity, and we're mandated by the state to provide a system of care. And that entity consists basically of a small unit, which is Bob as the Commissioner of Mental Health and me as the fiscal officer, and then there's a third person who is our board administrator who works directly with the board. Then we have, I say it's a small unit, but just within the department, but there's also the Community Services Board, and of that there are three subcommittees, specifically our mental health, alcohol and substance abuse, and then the developmental disabilities. So those three committees and subcommittees and the committee all meet on a monthly basis and are our support and sounding board, as well as our mandate. So the system of care we look at as the county as a whole, and we are part of that as a service provider, but we also are subcontracting with other nonprofit agencies in the community to provide the services that I have listed up there, from the clinical services, which is primarily our department, family and children's, housing services through Lakeview, recreation services through the City Youth Bureau for those that have developmental disabilities, case management, and education. And here are some, here's some more of the organizations that we work with. There are a couple of pages of them. Let's see, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Of course, suicide prevention, the Alcohol and Drug Council, Cayuga Addiction Recovery Services, these agencies of course, have certain fields of expertise that we are able to contract with, and we provide money that is coming through the Office of Mental Health. And the three disabilities that I mentioned earlier are all through New York State. So we're their conduit and their contracting agency. We also have a relationship with the Cayuga Medical Center, the Psych Center at Greater Binghamton, Elmira Psych Center, and Broome Developmental, and this is all part of that system. In regard to, and I'm going to jump back to the specifically to the mental health department. In our department, I know when I first started there, it's almost 6 years. I had no idea what was going on in that building. There is a clinic that is providing services to the community. There we have psychiatrists and nurse practitioners and nurses and psychiatric social workers and a forensics team. So we're providing clinical treatment services for anxiety and depression, post-traumatic stress. We're working with people that have schizophrenia, major depression, bipolar illness. We're doing a medication management for those folks, as well as providing certain types of therapy, either in group or, and then quite a bit of individual one-to-one therapy. We provide emergency outreach services. We're working with other departments in the community to provide that. And let's see. And to continue our services, we work with, we have some money that's coming in from the Office for Mental Health, providing us with some state aid to provide free screening services for children in the community, which, so we're working on a project, many projects with the schools to be able to do screening of young people and also then follow up therapy with them. Let's see. Oh, I can't tell whether I'm moving. Yes, I did. The single point of accountability for children's services, and then the single point of entry. These actually represent teams of people, professionals within the community that are discussing and trying to decide what the most appropriate services are for particular people, whether it be in adult housing or case management or for children's services. Actually, I believe all of our intensive case management, all of our case management has to go through SPO. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between point of accountability, single point of accountability, and single point of entry?
Well, it's mostly a term from the state.
It's a state jargon term. Is all it is. I guess they gave the children's services an A and the other one an E, to be honest. I think that's all it is.
It was pretty confusing to me. SPOA or SPO, somebody says something different, but that is, it is, it's just a state
term. They both function in exactly the same way, which is to try to appropriately send people, to get people the services they need from case management, housing, other
right, and so it may be the place where they're referred to may be in the mental health department or not in the mental health department. Is that correct? Or
not that is done independently, but it would be placement, say in Lakeview Mental Health Housing, for example.
Right.
If somebody wants housing through mental health housing, it could be that type of thing, or a case worker, which we have the case workers would come through there.
Okay, thank you.
When one of the groups that is always in attendance at the single point of entry is the Cayuga Medical Center, because we always want to make sure that there's follow-up to any hospitalization that would occur. These services are all something that we're connected with, and at the clinic, which includes the clinic case management and continuing day treatment, we are seeing 1,250 active patients at any given time, over 2,000 patients per year. 33,000 visits per year. And we're also pleased to state that that we have a pretty good record of short waiting times, that there's always excellent access to psychiatric services. This is a screen that just shows the mandate that we have with the county, that we are mandated to provide hospitalization services and ambulance services. And a simple chart, we're pretty flat. It's an $80,000 that we set aside for this purpose. And you'll see it sort of up and down in 2007 and 2008, but it was a bit of an anomaly. We received 2007 bills in 2008, so it's not a... So it's pretty consistent in regard to what we're spending. We might be actually a little low in our expenditures in 2010, but I probably shouldn't say that because then we'll get a bill. The next piece I've talked about a little bit about the local government unit and how and what our role is that we're managing the funding down at the bottom there. There are probably 40 different funding streams that are specific to certain programs and services within the three agencies that we work with from the state. For example, Lakeview Mental Health Services provides residential services to the mentally ill in the county. So there's a specific targeted funding stream that comes through. And some of the other streams that we work with have been based upon years of working with agencies and what they do best and how it's most appropriately spent. The next two are pie charts. I hope I'm not moving too fast, but I know that you do have this in front of you. I don't want to just read from it.
It's actually great.
Thanks. So here are the revenue sources for all the mental health programs in the county. So this includes everything that we're managing as well as the money that's within the department. For 2011, our target is $1,535,987 from the county, and the rest of the pie, we have state aid coming in, and billing coming in. And again, this is the entire county. And then here is just the department. Yes?
Yes, Pat.
That figure that you showed for the county in the previous slide, did that represent the cut, the 6.9 reduction?
It includes that, yes. It's already in there. So our new target is that 1.5.
Peter?
Yeah, I have a question on the previous slide. Mm-hmm. You could go back to that.
I think I can. Did it go? No? There we go.
Yeah. We've had a lot of discussion about state mandates in this room recently. So if I look at that yellow slice, and just holding aside all considerations of what's good, what's possible, what's responsible, what's good or what's responsible, could we, according to state law, reduce that yellow slice to zero if we wanted to? Or is there some minimum size to that yellow line that we are required to have? And if so, how much smaller is it than the yellow pie cut that you've got there? Do I make myself clear?
You do, and it's a complex question, though, because, of course, there are some matching funds that we need to be responsible for through the Office of the Developmental Disabilities as well as OMH. So there are some funds there that we need to have a county match for. Also in OASIS, all three disabilities. So there's a certain portion there that could that we can't touch. But there's another aspect, though, that has to do with services. For example, our whole forensic team, the majority of that is paid for by these county dollars. And if we don't have a forensic team, providing services in the county, And it is one of the mandates that we have from New York State and the Office of Mental Health in our new clinic restructuring. So somewhere along the line, we need to find the dollars to fund that.
Okay, but just, I realize there's no precise answer to
right.
the question I posed, but I'm just looking for something, you know, that sort of looks like, I don't know, 45 degrees, it looks like. And I just wondered how much it could, if we just completely neglected what the effects would be.
If we neglected, say, particular services and only dealt with the dollars that needed to be matched,
right.
I would say we could cut that by a million.
By a million, yeah.
Okay. And Bob would probably say.
Okay.
But.
Yeah.
So I would just point you to the budget program budget book, in which each.
Excuse me, Carol, can you use your microphone?
Oh, sorry. I was eating and didn't want to impose there. I would point you to our program budget book, which I've been keeping on my desk, and where the programs are described, some of them as mandated and mandated how we do them, and
right.
some of them mandated but discretionary. So I get a higher figure looking at that book as to if you add it up, I mean, as many pages that it goes on.
Everything that would be mandated, you mean?
Yeah, if everything that's mandated. Some of them are discretionary as to how we do them. But it would be, I don't know if it's an interesting figure to have because there are many
right.
things.
But it is, but it is a complex
yeah.
figure because there are some that have to do with matching and then others that have to do with actually mandated services that are going to show up as a mandated service in the book with the you're talking about the impact assessment
yeah.
that whole.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Right.
Okay.
Go ahead. Okay. Right. All right. So some of the when I think of the revenue and how it is generated and how it comes into our department, I mean we are looking at approximately 33,000 bills per year. So the primary revenue is based upon a fee for service. And in many ways, our department is more of a business model than many of the other departments in the county, though we are also receiving state aid. Let me go through it. Let's see. So the rest of that is broken down, and then but the way in which it comes to us, the majority of it is almost half, a little more than half is Medicaid, then there are Medicare, private insurance, and self-pay. So every time someone comes in and has a therapy session with one of our clinicians, this is the way it's usually broken out. And then a sliding scale is used, and as we said earlier on, to everyone is served without regard to ability to pay. We don't turn anyone away. We have a very active billing unit. They're working with about 12 different plans. They've got hundreds of different companies on file that they work with. They're doing everything that they can to maximize our revenue. And I wanted to speak also about some of the cost savings that we've had over the years. We have reduced a number of positions in regard to our management and supervision. I wish I could do these side by side, but let's see. There's been some reorganization and additional responsibilities given to some of the upper management in the department, as well as consolidating some of the functions. We've increased some hours in our billing unit, actually as well as our forensic team, increased productivity expectations. And that last one, Bob had in, and I didn't want to take it out by any means because it is quite an amazing staff, though we feel we're pretty much at capacity right now. So in the last 5 years also, here's our FTEs from 2006 to what we budgeted for 2011, which is about a 13% reduction. This screen describes a lot of what we're doing, and we are facing a lot of non-funded mandates from the state. One of them is our compliance program, which many of you are familiar with. We have a team of clinical and administrative staff that are working regularly and consistently on that, which actually dovetails with the third and fourth items here. One of them is clinic restructuring, which is being a mandate coming down from the state that affects how our delivery of service and how we bill, and that went into effect on October 1st. And we're still struggling, along with many, many other counties around the state, of exactly how that's going to look. And that dovetails with the we're in the process of purchasing an electronic medical records software, which will, the electronic piece is the key piece. It's going to take place of our paper charts. We're hoping that it's going to be easier to access for people in the field and for people when they're working with clients. And even though I'm speaking a great deal about specifics, our bottom line is always how we can be more effective, how we can treat our clients to the best of our ability. And these are elements that will help us, and some of them are mandates that are coming from the state. That second one, the quality assurance program, is we're doing a project within the department looking at an integrated healthcare program where our clients that are coming in are not just receiving therapy, but also we're looking at their overall health, whether it be smoke cessation or weight loss. And so we have an incredible team of nurses who are working on that project. And I also have to say that quality assurance program allows us a higher fee for service through Medicaid. So it's a revenue generating as well. Okay, let's see. So, and here we get to, this is the 6.9 budget reduction requirement, a little over $113,000. And so in our 2011 budget, there are 2.5 positions that are in there in 2010. So the following positions are currently vacant. We will not fill them. We feel fortunate in that we didn't have to do any layoffs, but certainly we're not going to be filling these. And what's happened is, there's just more absorption of duties by other people and taking on the work of those that left. Also, I do want to say that between the board and administration at the department, we decided to not pass on any of that reduction to our service providers. You may remember from last year, we did pass on some of the reduction that we had. And that brings us to, last but not least, the one OTR that we are requesting for a supervising psychologist. This is a professional position, person that's doing a lot of testing, and assessment. John can speak a little better to that. This is somebody he's worked with.
Well, I don't really speak Bobby's or whatever that is up there, but you can read it. Basically, in the glory days of money, we had a child supervisor who supervised the children's unit, provided consultation for difficult cases. We had a psychologist who did psychological testing, provided consultation on difficult cases throughout the clinic. The child supervisor retired. We said, let's let the supervising psychologist supervise the kids unit. She retired, but then we talked her into doing a contract for what averaged out to be about 25 hours a week to do pretty much the same thing for less time. She finally gave up completely, and Bob assured me, oh, John, you're next in the org chart. You can sort of, you don't know how to do psych testing. You don't really know how to supervise the kids' therapists any better than they do it, but you can cover them until we hire somebody. But I didn't realize that part of the way he balanced the 2010 budget was to leave that contract sort of out of it, and he's kind of realized, and I've realized it doesn't work so well, that to have somebody with some clinical have to help with difficult children's cases on a supervisory basis to do psychological testing is a valuable thing to the clinic at whatever level, whatever number of hours you choose to fund it. It's a PhD level psychologist that we just don't have right now. So that is the OTR, for better or for worse.
Here are some figures about it, too. And again, you have all of this information. But we're looking at an over-target request of the 86,000. We do anticipate that we will be obtaining revenue. The psychological testing does bring in a higher level of reimbursement, which I just found out today. I always learn something new. You'll see in your impact assessment that the overall cost of children's services is almost $500,000, and the billing and state aid covers a large portion of that. So right now the current county cost is the $38,000, which we are directly paying for services for our child psychologist. And that last note is, this is what we are receiving from the state in regard to state aid. We are hoping that that's not at all at risk because of our need for this supervising psychologist. I do want to say that this person would not just provide supervision for the children's unit, but also to the other clinicians within the department. So, thank you again. And questions?
I have Brian, and then Mike, and then Peter.
Oh, I guess we do.
Thanks, and between the time I raised my hand and when you just got done, you basically just answered my question. Mine was just going to be very simply, how did you make out between July of 2009 to date? I see someone shaking their head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Muddled through.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Understood. I do have, and normally I try to keep right to script, and we are dealing with money and OTRs and things like that. I do have one question that's kind of near and dear to me. Several years ago, Terry Garahan and Bo Saul started a program basically interacting with patients that are in distress or have come to the attention of law enforcement. Where is that?
Where that is now is the county, I think, last year funded. We have it, one position, which two people each do half-time for EOS?
EOS, Emergency Outreach.
Emergency Outreach. Okay. People who go out in the community, really basically not tremendously reimbursable, go to the police station to check on police reports. The new billing methodology has some possible ways to maybe bill for some of that. But basically, so it's still in existence with Joanne Conway and Penny Calderazzo, who are the main people, and then Linda Riley and Jason Stark sort of fill in when they're not there so that somebody can go out. If the police give a call and say somebody's making a disturbance, come sort of help us talk the person down, or if we have a patient who's having some trouble, we'll go and meet the police to take them in. So that program still exists. Mm-hmm. It's just not with Terry.
Okay. Right. Well, yeah.
And there are also a number of groups that are being run on a regular basis that the people that John just mentioned are responsible for. So it's quite active.
Okay. I guess I was fairly confident that you folks would be still involved. I'm wondering on the law enforcement side, because I know Bo was very involved. And of course, you folks know the history behind why that started. And
Yeah, the critical incident team, yeah, which is still...
SIN team, yep. That's still in existence. Yeah. I do know that.
Mm-hmm. They still have tight relations. I don't think there's another Bo who kind of has grabbed it in the same way
thankfully,
that Bo did,
yeah.
To be honest.
I'm joking on that. But. Okay. Very good, because that is invaluable, I believe.
Yeah, we do too.
I have Mike, I have Peter, and then Frank.
The over-target for the clinical psychologist, could that be funded at a less than full-time position?
Since I mistakenly spoke honestly and said it was about 25 hours and we survived before, then to be honest, it could be funded at a less than full-time position.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Though I do have to say that our supervising psychologist was, she was also giving us a lot of time. You know, we had her, our contract was between 25 and 28 hours a week. But I agree with John.
Peter.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One is simple and the other isn't. The simple one is, in your opening slide, you talked about one of the things that state mandates in your sack of goodies or is substance abuse and alcoholism. And I never saw any other reference to it in the presentation, unless I missed it. And I just wondered how come.
The reason is that the local government unit, which Bob and Betsy are, they sort of oversee all of the services for developmentally disabled people, substance abuse, and for mental health. So they oversee all of them. The mental health clinic is licensed as just a mental health clinic. So that's why you didn't hear more about it.
Right.
Okay.
We allocate money to the Cayuga Addiction Recovery Services Program as well as the Alcohol and Drug Council. And BOCES has an education program, so a lot of that money goes out. We also have on staff, he's called a dual recovery coordinator, working with those organizations as well as ours. And what that means basically is someone has a dual diagnosis of mental illness as well as a substance abuse problem. So it's definitely something that's part of it, but we may not be seeing as much of it as the other agencies.
Okay, now just one little further thing about that particular relationship. Is that just a matter of signing checks, you know, is distributing money, or is it mean that you have a responsibility to make sure that the quality of those services is appropriate and whoever is delivering them?
The latter is
the
true.
The latter, okay.
Right. Yes.
So that was the easy question. The harder question is one which I've asked before, and I bring to the question no knowledge whatsoever. But I did note that you gave no specific knowledge, Brian.
No, I just got it where you asked something.
At some point you talked about in the past 5 years, you also mentioned the glory years, maybe that was 5 years ago, maybe it was longer, but in the past 5 years, the number of FTEs that you have has gone down, I forget what it was, but like between 10 and 15%, something like that. First off, what has the number of cases done over that same period of time, roughly? Is it flat? Has it gone up? Has it gone down?
What do you think, Becky? Can you answer that one?
Please come to the microphone.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
That's all right. And identify yourself, if you would, please.
Rebecca Kafka, administrative coordinator.
Thank you.
Our intakes have actually increased quite a bit. I don't have the specific numbers on that, but our caseloads have actually been a little higher as well. I don't have the specific numbers, but they have gone up.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Now, that must mean either that you're doing things more than 15% better than you were doing them 5 years ago or more efficiently, or it means that we're not delivering the same level of service to the people that we were 5 years ago. And I wonder, and in a sense, that's the bottom line. That's what the cuts end up as, one way or the other. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what that change over 5 years means to the to the population that you serve?
Again, to be honest, in the past 5 to 10 years, Bob or Bart would have said there was some error in the system so that fewer staff could serve the people. There's some idle time, one less person serving the same number of people, so that there's room for some staff decreases, which did happen. What is happening now is that waits are a little bit more longer appointments. There are somewhat fewer. My goal always for a mental health clinic publicly is it's a major victory if you give adequate care quickly to a lot of people, because if you spend hours with one person, a lot of other people don't get seen. And for a public clinic, you want to serve as many people as you can. And I don't think the quality suffered per se, although waits have drifted up at times. Three to 4 weeks. Our children's team had a couple month wait over the summer because we had two people go down at the same time, and there was not the slack that there used to be, but that's part of, in a way, an efficient operation. So I don't think service has suffered that much, even though staff is a bit more strained. And I'm certainly a little strained trying to be a kid supervisor. I'm going to have to add that. But.
Yeah, I want to add to that, too, that the strain on some of the staff there, I believe that there are a number of the supervisors, the clinical supervisors, who are carrying more of a caseload than they may in the past. And that's a fine balance, you know. How do we supervise adequately while we're also doing direct service?
I mean, to me, you see, it's important to have that information because as a fledgling legislator, it's hard for me to hook onto this problem and see it in any kind of perspective. If one can reduce the money and it doesn't really fundamentally change the level of service, then we're not to worry. And if on the other hand, it does, to worry. And somehow, it seems to me, I don't know what the right metric is, but it would be nice next year when you do this to be able to show something like waiting times or I don't know what, because I don't know the business, but something that shows what's happened and how this has translated into a problem for the people that we represent. That's just a suggestion.
Yeah, and I also want to throw in to remember that piece of a lot of the unfunded mandates that we're faced with, the challenges that we're faced with in regard to compliance and quality assurance and all of these things that we still have to do and, you know, put on different hats all during the day. And
right, no, I understand.
Yeah, so there's that challenge as well.
Frank.
Right, Peter?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I was supposed to ask a question. Right?
Right. You're after him.
Oh.
Just the...
That's an inside joke, please.
Okay.
Don't pay attention to it.
Okay, good.
Don't Our pay leader attention said to we any have to frame you? These things in the guise of a question, you know.
I just nod?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Just nod.
You have it.
OTR, for a question about the OTR, is there any other way that the services that individual might perform could be accommodated by anyone else?
You mean someone else in the county or in the department?
In the department.
Well, basically, that's already happened.
That's what's being done now.
When you say it, John.
But there is a little room from what I heard you say before. In shaving a few bucks off that, if you had to.
Well, if you're saying that as opposed to the 35-hour person, something less than that, I could see that. But there's no other psychologist, and there's no other sort of high-level children's supervisor sort of floating around the department today who could step in and do that.
The thing I wanted to point out, because. Bob, you know, appears at the Health and Human Services Committee every month. This programs like Alpha House and a lot of the developmentally disabled, the substance abuse programs, there's no net cost to those because a lot of them are offset by revenues. If you, as you go through the pages, you'll see it. In that one category, you have almost $1 million worth of cost, and it's almost all offset by reimbursements. The net effect on in that particular area is about $58,000 on almost $1 million worth of expense. And as you go through the pages, you'll see that a lot of this, a lot of these services that mental health delivers are pretty much offset by revenues in one manner, shape, or form. It's labor intensive. There's no doubt about it. Personnel costs are the highest expense, I would think. But I wanted to, I really wanted to explore that OTR a little bit. Thank you.
I have Pat, I have Dooley, and now I have Carol.
Actually, Frank's comment was a good segue into what I wanted to ask about. As I look through here, I noticed the same thing that Frank just pointed out, that a lot of these programs, though fairly expensive, receive funding that offsets their cost. However, if you go through and you look at the programs, there are not very many, but some of them are discretionary. So in some cases, the county has at some point in time decided to provide a program that's not mandated and not required to be provided. Now, in some cases, those programs, if we provide them, do have mandates as to how the level that they have to be provided. What I can't tell from this is, in those cases, whether or not we fund them beyond what is mandated to be funded. So I'm not able to tease that out from the figures that are available, and that's something that I'd like to be able to do. In other cases, we have programs that are mandated, but the way we fund them is discretionary. And again, it's not clear to me whether or not they could be funded at a different level and still meet the mandate. And in a, maybe just one or two cases, there are programs that are totally discretionary. As I look through this, it appeared to me that there is probably a neighborhood of some $400,000, give or take, depending on whether there's any wiggle room in some of those budgets, that could be considered for possible cuts if we needed to, either because the program is discretionary or because the way we fund it has some discretion. Does that sound about right to you?
Can you give me an example? Are you referring to programs that are within the department as opposed to any of the service provider, external service providers? Is that what you're referring to?
Without going back through this again, I can't do that very easily. I'm going through the impact assessment forms.
Right.
And, for example, there's a program, the Ithaca Youth Bureau Recreation Support Services, which is a discretionary program. However, apparently if we do provide this, there's a cost to the county of $47,661. Okay. So theoretically, at some point, we've made a decision that that's a program that's important enough that we want to provide it. Mm-hmm. However, we could, if we chose to, say that we're no longer going to provide that program at all. And what I'm saying is that there's probably in the neighborhood of $400,000 involved in your budget that fits that category.
That fits that description. Bob and I work closely with Bob on the impact assessment. And one of the things that we struggled with in the development of that is that so many things dovetail with one another. For example, there might be adult clinic services in there, and then we have another tab that's assessment and intake. Mm-hmm. And so both of those may have county dollars attached to that. How we would separate that would be some internal workings. And certainly we're looking at the department as a whole, and it was a really interesting exercise to break everything down that cleanly, because it's the clinic, case management, continuing day treatment, and then all of the different facets. So it was an interesting exercise, and certainly
one that we're continuing to look at. I would hope, and I believe I heard Jim speak of this in the beginning, that as we approach that avenue, if that's where we need to go, that all of the work, that the commissioner and the administrative team will be able to have a great deal of discretion in how that all occurs, because it is so, like, such a house of cards, I guess I want to say.
Thank you.
I have duly Carol Frank Bryan.
For the PhD psychologist that you referred to earlier, is it easier to hire a full-time one or a part-time one? Do you have a sense of that?
I'm going to shoot myself in the foot to say that a somewhat part-time one may be easier to find, because often good psychologists like to keep little private practices and make lots of money along with working, as opposed to historically in all the years of the clinic, sometimes it's been hard to find a full-time psychologist. Mm-hmm. So honestly, the answer would be yes.
That's what I thought, but I'm glad to hear you say that. Thank you.
My question concerned the psychologist as well. But I've got now another question raised by your answer to Julie's question, which is, is there a potential conflict of interest to a supervising psychologist who has a private practice and also ends up supervising? Would there be cases that either they couldn't take in their private practice and or things that they couldn't do for the county because of who their clients were on the private side?
They might have to recuse themselves in some way. I mean, I myself have a private practice. I work at the Alcohol Council. I work for the county. I have to dance around a lot. I make sure not to refer myself patients. If other people decide that the clinic, we just have to work around the potential conflicts. I don't think there'll be that many, because people who psychologists see privately tend to have insurance and money, and people who come to the clinic tend to have not so much insurance or money. So, but it could happen, and we would try to make sure that the psychologist doesn't self-refer and siphon away our clients or anything like that.
It is part of our compliance program that's an issue that we are aware of, or not just aware of, that we have to be responsible and accountable to. So.
Okay, thanks. And then coming back to the dollar issue, I do believe that this is one of those services that one can be penny wise and pound foolish. That spending some of the discretionary money means that we then are stemming problems before they become bigger problems that cost us more, both in human emotion and family impact and dollars to the county. But that said, we have been hearing department after department. I don't know how long you were here today, but we have people in here begging us to restore $2,500 that will have an impact for landowners, farmers.
Pardon me,
but
please ask your question.
So what I'm trying to get is more of a, is it possible, if not now, maybe in the coming couple of weeks, to pin down more of a dollar figure as to what we might be able to do to satisfy the need for this supervising psychologist and still be able to meet some of these much smaller needs? I was going to play with numbers before you said the part-time. I assume when you say part-time, you mean like 50%? Or are we talking more than 50%?
Well, that's certainly something that we can come back. We've asked, and there have been recommendations from the administration, and, certainly if there's the opportunity to receive a part instead of none at all, we'd be happy to present you with another request.
Can I make sure I understand the question, though, so we can help
yeah.
make sure there's a response? Is your question what can happen with that position, or is your question are there reductions in other parts of this budget that they might recommend to be able to preserve funding for this position? My question, I think, is
back on that slide about how much it costs. My question is how much we might be able to save and still be able to hire this position, if not full-time, at something less than full-time. What, you know, there's an $86,000, $670 request. Could we, you know, if we put $46,000 instead of the $86,000, would that suffice?
So you are asking for, are there reductions in other areas of that budget that might offset the cost of this?
No, I'm hearing them say that we might be able to do a part-time position instead of a full-time.
That the OTR
time.
Would actually
so
be
what
less.
Would that then cost us?
Okay.
How are they talking about 0.5, 0.6, 0.7?
May I answer that question? I think what you do, if you want an answer to that, they can't tell you unless we say to them, you're getting $45,000, tell us what you're going to do with it. And it has to be a part of the whole budget. Okay? And I really believe that for them to come up now and answer a question is virtually impossible unless we have, they have all the information, they have a budget to deal with. Frank.
If we were to give you $500,000, what would you do with it? No, don't answer that.
I could answer that really quickly.
Can you say, a comment was made earlier about the a concern about level of service, quality of service, number of cases. The one parameter that didn't enter in there is the state changed some of the requirements, if you will, for individuals who became eligible for services. I know that different programs had that happen to them, and it changed some of your internal workings. How much of that would you guess, due to the state changing the game plan a little bit, how much of that translated into some of the changes in the numbers? Quite a bit, a little bit, not a lot?
I think actually we're facing that more right now than we were in the past.
Yeah.
And a lot of the numbers changing in staff mostly had to do with a sort of a natural attrition, people leaving and us not filling and then trying to reorganize. But as we go into this clinic restructuring program, which started
that
October
just started,
1st,
right.
You know, it has to do with how we bill and what certain professionals have as their credentials and what kind of services they provide and how that all works. So it's a big unknown.
Well, one of the reasons I'm asking is the state broadened the parameters for autism big time. And there are more people now, we're seeing it through the health department, there are more kids now that qualify because of the change than there were before. Mm-hmm. And I've got to believe some of that has happened in mental health also, directly.
Would you say that's true, John? Or?
Well, not from the autism parameters.
No. But as an example, I'm just using that as an example.
But in the definition of the mentally ill or who's eligible for services.
Some of what they do is they'll give us, and since we were in the old billing system, it was just our clinic, sort of an unfunded mandate to see certain people from the hospital within 5 days, no matter what, which we actually are able to do barely by juggling people, and that's been pushed a little more lately. They've been, because obviously clinics in other counties don't really do it, even though the rules say so. And but that isn't, it's an unfunded mandate, just in the sense that I don't want to say we don't have the resources because we barely do, but it's a tight fit.
It's tight, yeah.
And it's just for the people who show up in an ER. So somebody just as much distress who doesn't go to an ER, they'll wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks or something, which if you gave me $500,000, that would be the first thing, is see everybody within 2 days, strike when the iron's hot, draw them in.
See Joe.
I have Brian.
Yes.
Go ahead.
In the book here, you are the finance director, ma'am?
I'm sorry, what?
Finance director? That's you?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm curious. I have a question, but and I hate people reading to me, but I'm going to do it anyway because I guess it's important. Per the direction of the finance director, the department is no longer able to enter into contractual agreements with individuals who are not independently incorporated. Is that a liability?
Well, let me explain what it is.
Okay.
Is the IRS wants everybody to go through payroll, to have their wages withheld for Social Security, and occasionally the county had to pay back taxes essentially for engaging in contractual independent contractors who with retired employees. And because in mental health, any kind of health clinic is particularly susceptible to this, because if you have a practitioner providing a service in your facility and he's under your control, that person is deemed to be an employee and therefore should be on the payroll. So that's what, and they have these instances where they contracted with individuals who weren't employees.
Right. And okay. That, it's a very fine line, which.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm interested in that only because, I mean, we're fast approaching a time when, you know, fringes are reaching, you know, 50-60%. And we may have to look into doing more of this type of stuff. So I was wondering if that was a liability issue, or what? I guess
we'll
leave it at that. But yeah. But it's just it's something that we're going to have to seriously take a look at.
Because it would be very relevant if they hired a psychologist and they're under contract and they were working in the clinic, then they would be deemed an employee. Right. And if they came back and audited, we would be liable for paying all the payroll taxes on that individual.
Okay. I was just curious why that was in there. And again, looking forward for,
And it's certainly one of the reasons
we're going to have to get creative somehow.
Yeah, well, it's certainly one of the reasons why we originally did it. But mm-hmm. then when we were dinged on the county level, we had to make a change. And actually, this particular person, the supervising psychologist, had actually left prior to that. She left last July. So, but that's what I mean in there. If we could, you know, we probably would have gone that avenue, because certainly then we save all that fringe cost.
Right.
But
right.
In the end, we didn't really. So.
Any other questions for these nice people? Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you for standing in for Bob.
It's I'm sure. Our pleasure.
TFC action. We have a
PowerPoint. Good evening. My name is Lee Dillon, and I'm the Executive Director of Tompkins Community Actions. Nice to be with you tonight. Not being a county department, I asked if I needed to do a county PowerPoint, and I was given a reprieve. I do have one slide that I can put up on the board. However, in thinking of time consideration, I have that slide in paper. So perhaps it would be easier if we just passed around the slide. I know that you all have gotten these PhDs and reports before, but I misplaced things, and so I figured that maybe others misplaced things too. Frank,
let me just say that the white pages are on page 267 of your book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If you would like the slide put up, I can. That's okay?
Okay.
Maybe I should have all the slides too. Could I take Cassidy and I'll give it back to her? Thank you. Thanks, Frank. So, Tompkins Community Action is a designated community action agency, one of 1,100 or so around the nation. We have been in existence since 1966, started out in 1964, incorporated in 66. We have enjoyed a strong and fruitful relationship with the county for all those years. We serve approximately 6,000 individuals, low-income individuals, annually. We have a staff complement of 150 employees who all make a living wage with benefits. We continue to develop and implement large community projects that serve some of the most vulnerable people in our community. Our target funding, with a little G on the bottom, there you go. We have last year received $172,000. We have asked to receive $160,000 this year. Our total annual budget, you can see right there. Today I figured out for every dollar the county invested in Tompkins Community Action, we leveraged $40.66. The county dollars are used for administrative costs, occupancy costs, and a very, very essential local match. This money that we receive from the county allows us to receive the federal funds that we bring into the county. That's all I have to say. I could say more, but.
Well, that's enough.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead, Frank.
Lee, can you say, and I think it's on page 268, first, do you bring into the county $16 million bucks? Is that what that? Oh, you don't have this page, do you?
Well, I do. It's in the annual report. We were very successful in our grant writing in the last year and a half. The $2.7 million that we brought from New York State Homeless Housing Assistance Program, that is to build Magnolia House, which is a 14-studio.
Right.
We also brought in $800,000 one-time funds through an early Head Start grant. We are hopeful that the rest of the I can't remember the exact figure what the ongoing grant's going to be, but it's for 92 children, infants, and pregnant women. The $800,000 was a one-time construction grant, and we are adding another about 7,000 square feet to a building in Groton that we own on Sykes Street. So we're almost done. I was just texting my architect in the back there. We're almost done with the plans for Groton to add another 3 classrooms, and a very important aspect of that is a rural outreach center, which will bring needed services to folks in Groton. We hope to be able to bring some VITA services, some WIC, some financial literacy. We'll be doing socializations and parent training with our Head Start parents and other parents in the community. Folks in Groton will be able to use it for their community activities too.
Can you also say what the status of the capital? We fronted some arrangement to buy a building or
mm-hmm.
to...
Mm-hmm. I think I can talk about that. I know I can talk about it, but I may need some help. A while back, the county has always helped Tompkins Community Action with its space. That has been sort of been a big part of the relationship. And in 1999, interest rates were very high. We needed to move out of the Biggs building. I think that was one of the first times I think it was supposedly going to be sold. But it was sold several times before. Eventually, now it doesn't exist anymore. But so we needed to move out, and we found a building. I came to the county that year. It was my first year as being as an executive director, and I asked to double our ask because the interest rates were about 11-12%. Some very smart people at the time were here and helped us sort of go into a bond note situation where Tompkins Community Action paid all the fees, paid all the note, paid the money, essentially part of the $160,000 that we received from the county goes back to pay that note. It was a very smart, I think, business move at the time. We carried a note bond for... Well, the whole thing's for 20 years, but we settled into a regular bond after about 4 years, and now we're and we continue to pay the fees and any costs that are associated with that. And I think that we helped to I don't know what we helped to do with the county, but it's been very successful. So the county actually owns our building. We have a lease for 20 years, and there you go.
Peter.
I'm a little confused also. I see, looking at the same number, I guess, that Frank was talking about, the $16.2 million down at the bottom of the page. And our cut is something like $12,000. Now, that's a tenth of a percent. I mean, the amount that we're reducing it is a tenth of a percent of your total budget. And normally, a tenth of a percent is in the noise. So you just a tenth of a percent of the budget is just doesn't really matter. Is that the case? I mean, suppose we didn't give you any funding whatsoever. Would you go along merrily with the $17 million that you're raising? And
no.
So I'm trying to understand.
Yeah,
that.
I understand. Okay. Yeah. Joe, on
The number you're looking at, Peter, in the budget book, that's $16,027,000. I believe that's inflated by the cost of that building project that Lee described, and maybe the stimulus grant for the rapid
several housing. Several stimulus grants are in that figure. We received part of a collaboration with the Human Service Coalition, DSS, Catholic Charities, that was part of a $2.4 million of rapid rehousing that will be going away. We received almost $1.4 million in some weatherization funds that will be going away. So we actively seeked Recovery Act funds that will be going away that are targeted for specific programs, specific people. So that is not that's like this in our budget. This will go away. And we have also agreed to a 6.9% cut in our county ask. So
I'm just trying to understand exactly what we do for you. In what sense could you not just stand alone and do this thing without the county?
Well, the federal funds all require a local match. And without this local match, we would not be able to bring down those federal funds.
Okay, so that local match, that was what I expected the answer was. But what does that have to be, the local match? Is it says your total local spending at the moment is $270,000. So is that the minimum that the match has to be? If it got to be less than that, does that somehow reduce the federal funding?
Yes. And I can get you that information. I don't have that exact information at my fingertips. Head Start has a federal match. All our HUD programs have a federal match. Our after-school programs have a federal match. So I would be happy. I don't have that with me, I'm sorry to say. But I can get
I'd be interested in seeing something that showed that.
Yep.
Right?
Right. I believe I have Pat Levin. Do you ever have
that? Lee answered what I was going to ask for that. That's
I have Pat, and then I'm... Carol, do you have your hand up?
I have my hand up.
Okay. You done, Peter?
Yes.
Are you finished? Go ahead, Pat.
Picking up on Peter's question, I don't find in our assessment program of assessment forms, assessment impact forms, one for Tompkins Community Action. Should there be one here?
We had about 26 of them.
There were quite a few of them. We went over them in the Health and Human Services Committee.
They're in the separate.
Should be in there.
Okay. Agency's not finding them.
I probably filed it.
Okay. Just you reminded me something, Pat.
Because basically I was wondering the same thing of this county amount that we're providing. What difference does it make that it's that amount? And that, you know, I can't find an answer to that in what I have here. What would happen if it were less than that?
Mm-hmm. We would lose some federal funding, but I can get those exact match numbers.
Good.
This doesn't cover our whole match, so I think that it's much larger than that. But I can hopefully provide you some more detailed financial information next week.
Thank you.
Sure.
Carol.
To answer Pat's question, it's in the separate packet of agencies that we got. It's page 63. It starts, and okay. It's a little piece here and a little piece there. My question for Lee is has to do with whether there's any overlap. I see one of your activities is the after-school programs.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any overlap or working together between what you do and what the youth services program that's under debate under our youth programs?
Well,
that we're
we've enjoyed a wonderful relationship with the Youth Services Bureau throughout the years. We work together on a primary school family support program that's in Greiden, Broughton, and Trumansburg. This is specific monies that come from New York State Office of Children and Family Services that allow us to run middle school program in DeWitt, and we are using Department of State, New York State Community Service Block Grant to run the middle school program at Boynton. So I don't know about overlap. I know that no one else is providing that service to those students. We have many organizations come into those programs. Advocacy Center does, they have series with the Advocacy Center and Relationships Building. We have Planned Parenthood come in for pregnancy prevention. We have CDRC come in for conflict resolution. So we have many, many collaborations within our programs that enhance the services that we provide.
Okay. I was not asking about the Youth Bureau. I was talking about overlaps with the county youth services.
So was I.
Budget with Nancy's sales.
Right. So that we do have a collaboration with the Youth Services Bureau with our primary school family support program. And we've worked on many, many things. We sit on the continuum of care together, homeless and housing task force. So I'm not sure what you mean by overlap, I guess.
We've heard it from a series of parents and students who participate in after-school programs throughout the county. The programs you mentioned that I see offhand mm-hmm. in the annual report that we just got are at Boynton and DeWitt.
Mm-hmm.
Do our other county youth programs operate at those particular schools, or are you providing something at those schools?
Hold on a second. Nancy, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I think I can help with that. Those two school programs are formal, structured, and licensed school-age child care programs. They run most days of the week and are...
5 days a week, 3 hours a day.
Yep. Five much more intensive than the rural youth service programs. The only place there's probably overlap is that the community-based youth worker hired by Cooperative Extension that works in Enfield and liaises with DeWitt? Boynton. Boynton, would certainly know the people running that program, probably helped recruit some of them, but some of them that can't participate in that might be in programs in their home community of Enfield or in the other rural communities that those programs draw from. One of our concerns is that those are the only two licensed programs, with one in Truensburg, and that's the only sort of state-sanctioned program for middle schoolers in the county. So if these others were to go away, there would not, I mean, we've got the program at GIEC as well. Sorry, Leslie?
I was just raising my hand to mention that.
So the number of programs, the capacity that the Daycare Council has just identified is really a fraction of what is needed if these other programs didn't exist. But there are staff who probably make referrals to and probably know the staff there, but they're providing complementary services.
Okay, thank you. And then my other question is just, if this were a more typical year, what's a more typical annual budget for you that when you're not receiving the federal stimulus dollars and other special programs?
$7 million.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Leslie?
Lee, the programs at Boynton and DeWitt, I just got confused a minute. It's not just for rural youth. It's for any youth who are at that school in okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And we're worried about that funding.
Lee, I have a question. Of the 6.9 mil, how much is salary and how much is everything else?
We just went through another audit. I think we're about 8. Yeah, I'd have to get that to you, but it must be at least 80% salary. We don't have a lot of, I mean, we have some housing operations. But I would say probably it might be a little high. But I could
roughly 80?
Yeah.
Okay.
And as a follow-up to my previous question, and is there any kind of a match aside from the facility from the school district for those programs that
are
held in the
school? Programs?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. The space, which is huge, and also busing.
Okay.
And then we collaborate internally with meetings and but mostly the space and the busing.
And the busing.
Any other questions for Liz? Thank you. We have the legislature now, and our most favorite person in the world is going to do her program right.
And take notes at the same time.
Right from here. And no, I'm going to take notes.
Our target for 2011 is $733,825. It's a 4% increase over 2010. Can't hear me? Can you hear me now?
Bring it closer, yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Our target for 2011 is $733,825. It's a 4% increase, primarily due to the increased fringe rate. 94% of our budget is personnel, which also includes the salary and fringe for legislators and staff. And with new technology and more reliance on computers, we are seeing some savings in our contractual expenses. Printing costs have been reduced by approximately 50% over the last couple years. Office supplies and postage have also decreased by about 30%. Our over-target request, the county administrator has recommended $17,958 of the $19,958 we requested. He's also recommended over target request one-time funding of $1,920. This is to be covered by rollover. The three over target requests we're requesting as target funding. County Administrator has recommended two of them. They include restoration of staff hours and local mileage reimbursement for legislators. What is not in the County Administrator's recommended budget is the OTR for travel and training. Attendance at conferences over the last few years has increased. Currently, there are on average 3 to 5 legislators that attend the fall and winter NYSAC conferences. And the impact of the OTR, if not approved, will limit attendance at the conferences to 2 legislators per conference. The over target requests in one-time funding is a new computer, software upgrades, and a projector for the Scott Heyman conference room.
Questions?
And that concludes my presentation. Questions?
Frank and then Mike.
Kathy said I had to make my question short. Kathy, if we only fund the travel and training line to the 4,000 recommended by the county administrator, what's your best guess as to how many people can attend how many conferences? Generally, it's for the NYSAC conferences. How many people does that generally represent?
It costs approximately $800 for one legislator to attend, so there would be a total of 4 for 1 year.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
Kathy, would you remind me, is there any change in legislator salaries for next year?
No, no increase.
So it stays the same?
Correct.
Any other questions? Julie?
Does the travel and training budget include any training that your staff needs?
No, it's for legislators only.
Only. You have a separate line for...
I don't have money in...
You don't have any at all?
Travel and training, no.
God knows we need training.
Yeah.
Any? Go ahead.
So has there been, is there any proposal as to how we might achieve some training in other ways that might be less expensive than attending conferences?
For legislators?
Yes. Or staff. We're talking about reducing the amount of the budget that goes really towards training.
Mm-hmm. Correct. That line has always been used for conferences, attendance at various conferences.
Right. So have we...
In the past, there's been a separate line that's been funded as one time. It's professional services, and there's been $5,000 in that line in years past, but it's always been one-time funding.
And that would be gone as well?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I hate to be crass, but if you really want to go to the conference, you can write a check.
Well, some people can, people can't.
Well, I mean... Was that a question? Wait a minute.
No, it's not a question.
Was that a statement?
Yeah. My question had to do more with whether there are alternative forms of training that we are looking at exploring to replace the attendance at conferences where we have received that training.
I hear it being said, increasingly webinars are being made available by NYSAC and other organizations that generally are free, and they're good. So, yes.
If they want.
May I make a comment, Frank, since we're doing comments?
Can you phrase it in the guise of a question?
I'm asking you a question. I think there are some, I've been here 5 years, and there clearly are some times when this legislature, as every legislature, should have some representative at a NYSAC conference when they're working on things that affect all counties. And you can't do that in a webinar, and it's hard to do it in a phone call. Sometimes you have to do those kind of things. But go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was suggesting that we zero out NYSAC, but maybe send one legislator instead of 4, and then get a report from that person. We could do that, right, Kathy? The other, just nod. You don't say anything. The serious question, though, is under membership dues, what are we paying $9,348 for?
That's NYSAC.
That's NYSAC. That is the whole NYSAC. Mm-hmm. That's what it costs. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Any other questions for Kathy? Thank you very much. And now.
Are you going to adjourn?
No, we're not going to adjourn. It's your services. Come on.
Are they taking their breaks right along?
I'm sorry?
Yep.
Yeah.
They're doing a great job keeping on schedule. But. Yeah.
While Nancy gets set up, I just wanted Joe to know that, by the way, webinars are beginning to cost now.
I'm sorry.
I said, yes, they're beginning to cost now. Yep. Yep. No longer free.
And there are reasons and disruptions during the nothing's free.
Yeah, I can. I get the pleasure and the honor of introducing Nancy's replacement, Amy Hendricks, who's sitting in the back of the room, who all of you have heard about. Some of you participated in the search committee to track down and hire. So we are all going to be on our best behavior tonight to make sure that Amy knows that it's a friendly, welcoming. In other words, I will leave the room for a while and. So, Amy, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Amy, you get to do the budget presentation.
Yes.
As long as you're here.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, I am ably supported in my labor tonight with Nancy Zook, Janice Johnson, Teresa Albert. Are here when I have a brain freeze and you need detailed answers, they are the backup people. But I actually wanted to take just a couple of minutes before I begin the formal budget presentation, because it's a little bittersweet for me tonight. I'm here tonight just weeks away from my retirement, and I wanted to be able to take just a couple minutes to reflect on 30 years. But don't worry, it won't be me. But I was struck that 30 years ago when I came to Tompkins County and attended my first budget meeting, it was in a nearly filled NYSAG auditorium at a time of budget challenges, so the room was packed. The county met there because this building at that time, and I'm sure some long-term community members will know this, this building wasn't yet handicap accessible. And the group had a meet in accessible places. And that's why it really touched me 30 years later, just two nights ago, when this body, following the precedent of the Distinguished Youth Award that Frank Proto created, was honoring a talented group of young leaders. And the fact that one of those talented young men arrived in a wheelchair and was able to get in and to participate in this chamber so easily, it just made me feel like I'm glad we've traveled that distance. I know that some of you know that I have a penchant for history, but don't worry. But there are two historical milestones that I do want to reflect on that I think bear very directly on the budget presentation. And I want to share those because they are the reason that I am so proud to have worked for this county for so long. They are the reason that when I travel out of this county to state meetings or to national meetings, I brag about Tompkins County and the pleasure and the privilege it is to work here. The first of these is in 1982, Groton legislator Phil Shurtleff was concerned about the very bad recession facing the country and the county at that time, not unlike the one we face today.
He was very concerned that teenagers would have nothing to do in the summer and that they would be idle and they would get in trouble. And he recommended, and this body, it was a Board of Representatives then, approved the county's first youth employment program, which offered a dollar-for-dollar matching funds to any municipality that chose to participate so that they could hire teenagers to work in the summer. And one by one by one, they stepped up, and the program turned into a fabulous success. I say it in reflecting because this year, sadly, we lost not only Phil Shurtleff himself, but the program, the municipal jobs program this year. The second milestone is directly related to the first, and it builds on it. And that is a situation where for many years, the mismatch of the municipal and school district boundaries in Tompkins County muddied the lines of who was responsible for children, youth, and youth programs. When intermunicipal tensions flared in 1987 and threatened to cut off hundreds of youth who happened to live on the wrong side of a jurisdictional boundary, this body, led by two of my heroes, Mary Call, a Republican, and Bev Livesey, a Democrat, asked the County Youth Services Board to come together and to bring municipalities together to find a common solution. It was the result of that work group that caused, in 1988, the Board of Representatives, or this legislature, to act on recommendations. They adopted, and I'm grateful to Michelle Potorf and the new system that the legislative staff here have now in place. They could root out for me Resolution 282 of 1988 that was adopted by this body to provide ongoing funds and staff support from the county to all municipalities on three conditions. One is they needed to create a local citizen planning group or youth commission. That youth commission needed to identify local youth needs, focusing on the non-recreational programs and the children who were falling between the cracks. The third thing they needed to do was plan and provide local services for local kids using local matching dollars from their municipality and community. In 1990, the county repurposed some of the taxes that had been used to pay for waste disposal and created a fund for the youth board to administer to both municipalities and to agencies to provide more specialized, equitable countywide services. As participation by municipalities increased and the needs and the gaps were identified, programs were developed and they've changed over time to meet the unique needs of each community. Prior to the program, communities in our county were serving just about 300 young people in youth service programs. That was in 87 when we had the records to look it up. Not unlike what was going on in our surrounding counties. Over time, the programs demonstrated their worth. Both the county and their municipal partners continued to support the continuum of prevention and early intervention programs. Today, 10 youth commissions, and they go by different names, oversee over 35 programs serving nearly 3,000 youth. And the county partially supports services for 2,200 of those. By all accounts, this partnership has been a great success, and we celebrated it last week, and I'm grateful for those who were able to share that with us. And I think that we celebrated last week in what I think people have said to me was in a way that palpably lifted the moods, the spirits, and the commitment of the volunteers and the school officials, the staff, and the legislators from both the county and local governments who attended. In a minute, in a few minutes, I will review with you the consequences of the proposal to eliminate this program. But before I do, it's important, as this is my last budget meeting with all of you, to say thank you. It has been an honor and a privilege to serve as your services director for the last 30 years. For those who know me or know me for a while, you know this has been a huge part of my life that I have loved. I've had exciting opportunities to be part of building a tremendous youth service system in this county. I've had the pleasure with working with dedicated youth board members, some of whom have served for many, many years. I've worked with and continue to work with an outstanding staff. I have collaborative colleagues and supportive legislators and elected officials who consistently come together across municipal boundaries, across partisan lines for kids. And because that's what we do in this community, which is why I'm so proud of it. And it's we just like we do it to support the library that we love through our taxes and our book sales. We support our transportation systems, our human service system, because those are the services that define us. Those are the services that meet our needs. And those are the services, among others, that make us proud to be members of this community. And I have been proud to be part of it and will stay a member of the community just from a different point of view. So thank you to you. And now on to the PowerPoint. Okay, let's see. Clicker, huh? Aim at what, Kevin? This.
Yes, Julie.
While you're
aiming, I'm sorry.
I hope Kathy can summarize some of that history in our minutes. I think it's good to get that down.
Yeah, I'm happy to give it to you if you want. It's right. You can also, of course, Bev would love to tell it anytime, but. Thank you, Julie. I knew you would appreciate the historical part and the citing of the resolution. Actually, on the handout that you've got, actually on the back of it is the resolution itself. But now I don't send you. That was a wrong thing to do, was tell you that, because now you're not paying attention. Okay, we're on to the beginning. You know what I think our purpose is, and it is completely aligned with the county's mission for serving vulnerable populations, strengthening not only families and communities, enhancing the quality of life, and preventing the need for more costly services. So that's what we're rooted in. We have our department is charged by not only the county but New York State for creating a continuum of opportunities that move from the most inclusive, least restrictive, and least expensive service settings to those that work in smaller and smaller groups with young people as their needs increase. And when community-based programs can't sustain young people, they need the services that are sometimes triggered through the child welfare and juvenile justice system. So to achieve our goals, we believe it's essential for a community to have a continuum of prevention, intervention, and intensive services. And this slide just gives you an overview of our departmental responsibility, which begins with planning and coordination. And while there are many universal services, the piece of responsibility the county has chosen to embrace and our department is responsible for is the recreation partnership and helping to bring that group together, providing staff support for it, which Janice does very ably, and the county acts as the funding agent for the municipalities who send money here, and when that board makes independent judgments about how to spend those money, we act as the fiscal agent on their behalf. Council, because it is a hybrid and an independently governed group, it actually is a separate budgeting unit in our budget. And tonight I'm really going to integrate that into the presentation because we've got really two budget presentations to make. One on our budget proposal of minus 6.9 like other departments did, and you need to know the impacts of that. The second presentation has to do with the under-target recommendation that was in the tentative budget. So what we find is when young people don't fit into the existing programs and might need smaller group settings, that's exactly what our municipal youth service system has been doing to provide some early intervention. And when those services may not be enough, they end up oftentimes in agency services that we fund. We contract with not-for-profit agencies who work usually in smaller and smaller groups, sometimes individually. And then there are times when our preventive services are not enough, and they do need more intensive services, either hopefully through the Department of Social Services. And then when none of us have been successful in the way we want, sometimes out-of-home placement's necessary. And Patricia will certainly talk with you more about that. What I wanted to do then was just really give you an overview to the current department and how we use our budget. And what's important to know, and sometimes people are unclear about, is that about this year in 2010, 73% of our total budget comes in the door through a combination of county and state money and goes back out the door to not-for-profit agencies, local communities, and others in the city of Ithaca who functions as both a municipality and a countywide service provider, and they together serve over 8,000 young people a year. So that's the biggest part of our budget. Then we do have our planning and coordination, which is really sort of our office operation, which includes some of the technical assistance to the recreation partnership, the municipal system. And then we do have grant-sponsored service, and the details show up a little bit more here. So when you take that 73%, it is broken out into three pieces. On the upper left, you see our contracts with not-for-profit agencies, which appear in the youth agency contract program of our budget. About 43% of our resources go there. About 17% have gone to the municipal system, the recreation partnership, and you can read around the chart. The CCHY, which may not be as familiar to you, is the Community Coalition for Healthy Youth, is our substance abuse prevention grant, our federal grant. We had a five-year grant, and we were selected to get a second five-year grant, which the second year of which just began this month. And JobLink is our staff providing a very small amount of time to supplement the efforts of the program staff working through the Employment and Training Office with low income and youth with special needs through the JobLink program, which is primarily federally funded. So that's that part. So what types of service do the 8,800 kids get? Reading up from the bottom, in our universal services, the Rec Partnership served 4,000, just over 4,000 different young people. They had far more registrations than that, but that's the unduplicated count. The next line above, I just want to take a second on, because the number on the left, the 2970, which maybe on your charts is, is the total number of young people who are served in any and all programs that are operated through communities, municipal youth service programs. And we are responsible not only to be the stewards of county money, but also state money that comes to those towns and the programs that they run. The number next to it in parentheses, the 2200 number, is the number of children participating in programs that in some way are supported with county dollars. And so through the rest of this presentation, when we talk about the municipal system, we'll be using the 2225, but there are more children being served, and our staff are responsible for helping to make those programs happen and to track the accountability of them. Then as you move up, which is exactly what it should be, you should be paying you should be having more children in universal, fewer children in early intervention, fewer yet in agency services, and that is the flow that works here. I'm sure we'll talk with you more about what her department does on the other end of that. What we found is that we wanted to tell you, so, okay, of those kids, where do they live? And I know this chart's a little fuzzy, and it's even worse in your handouts, but let me tell you how to read it. Each one of those little icons is supposed to look like a child, and each one represents 10 children. The green ones are children served by local programs through the municipal youth system. And the, what do you call that, red? We'll call them red. The red ones are children, each one represents 10 children served by the not-for-profit agencies that we fund. So this is not a typical GIS map that actually plots the exact household, but it is a way to try to visually show you the distribution of those resources. What's not on this map, because it's been done separately, are the children served, or the households served in the recreation partnership. So they're not included in there. Plus, we'd have not enough space for them. But let's see what's next. Yeah, the prevention programs are, we find them to be very cost effective. And again, as you would expect, if you start at the bottom of that pyramid, when you take the total cost being spent on the rec partnership and divide by the number of children who participated, the total cost comes out to be about $165 per youth. The municipal system altogether works out to be about $270. Agency services average, there's a range certainly, but the average is close to around $1,000. And then we do know from other cost estimates that when expensive treatment or residential services are needed, it pretty much starts around 13 and can go up to 2 and sometimes even 200 and even more. So that just puts you in the ballpark of where we do. We believe the programs are successful because we know the agencies who we contract with report to us on their outcomes and on their results. And they've been able to document at least 48 young people who were diverted from those more expensive systems. And this other data point came from the Learning Web, which tracks the youth in its outreach program that are some of the homeless youth they serve. And they were able to able to help young people find housing that did not, and they did not require Section 8, which is, of course, a government-paid program that may or may not really directly on the county budget, but it is a program that ends up saving taxpayer dollars. Okay, now we're into sort of budget details, Part A. This is the overview of our minus 6.9% budget proposal, the budget that we did like every other department. We had a total to cut of $79,000. And the next slide is a modification of what Joe and Kevin suggested, and what a surprise I gave you more information. Let me just tell you, let's look first at the top line where it says target. And in this case, because the recreation partnership is a separate budgeting unit, I've actually asked Teresa to collapse into the top line all of the county target money from 2010 and 2011. The 2011 figure of target, that 1,082,000, represents what our request was for, our ongoing target, which had some reductions. It included direct partnership money. It included our over target requests, and it also included one more thing. Last year, this legislature adopted a two-year sort of one-time for two different youth programs, and those funds are rolled into there as well. That's what that represents. The $59,000 is included in the $1,082,000. We've listed out our other revenue sources, and down on the bottom is really the total projected budget that we submitted, and the you see the figures there. The FTEs last year the current year is 6. Last year we lost a half-time position, so we're at 6. We were at 6.5. Now we're at 6. Next year, we are at 6, but only because we are using some administrative savings and some additional revenue that our department generated to hold staff harmless. But what it turns out to be is an anticipated cut of about a third of a position next year. Rollover is plugging the gap for this year, and that's been recommended. But that's those are, I guess, the next slides here. All right, let me ask you, are there questions people have? That's a lot to take in. Or just yeah.
Well, one question, Nancy. What I would like to see you do is roll through it, and then we could do the questions.
Okay, that's good. So this is similar to what you've seen with others. There are a total of 4 over-target requests comprising that 47,000, 28 of which was recommended by the administrator. And then, of course, I think we're the first of the departments this year that you're talking to with this under-target recommendation of basically a cut to our base budget. After having it cut, we did ask for it back. It was not recommended, and that's what we'll talk more about in a minute. But I wanted to continue to focus. Within our 6.9% budget scenario, we did have some over targets, and here's what they were. We actually only submitted 1 over target for target dollars, and that was in an amount of $98.51. And that was actually because we valued the municipal system, and they had taken not only county cuts in recent years, but state cuts. So in the last 2 years, they had lost about 30% of their funding, and we were just trying to hedge bets so that if we didn't get these funds, what we would see is an even deeper digging into the program side of the budgets in each community. So where some communities need to be able to contract with a specialized provider to work in partnership with the local community staff to draw in some of the youth with the highest and most complex needs, some of that programming might suffer if we don't get that, is what we were asking for at the time. And that hasn't been recommended, in part because if you don't, my understanding, if you don't have a system, you don't need to shore it up. Down below, however, the rec partnership, because the county is in a signed 5-year agreement with its municipal partners, we did ask for the amount that the partners decided was needed to not even maintain services in 2011. They were maintaining the budget at the same level. The total program budget for the rec partnership will stay the same in 2011, and they ask municipal partners to maintain their current level of spending. But we'll talk about the consequences of that in a minute. So to do that, because we had a target cut, this is the amount we needed to ask back. The rec partnership board wanted that amount requested. We submitted it. Joe, at this point, has recommended that. And for anybody who isn't familiar with it, the rec partnership has a formula that commits the county to paying 1/4 of the net cost after all the fees are subtracted from the expenses. The city of Ithaca pays 1/4, the town of Ithaca pays 1/4, and all of the other participating municipalities share the remaining 1/4 using a formula that combines property wealth and participation. And Janice can give you all the details if you choose to know that. Then you wanted to know about one time, and we had 2 requests for one-time money. The 26,000, again, that was what I was referring to when we said we're using rollover to maintain our staff. We had $26,000 from a combination of some purposeful savings from the prior years and some revenue that we were able to bring in that exceeded previous year budget, and have applied most of that to primarily to maintain staffing, but also to shore up some of our operating accounts. These operating accounts will actually be in pretty dire straits in 2012, and I'm counting on Amy and the staff to deal with that challenge. But for 2011, that's been recommended. The other was actually sort of a 2-part program rollover to try to support and maintain a reduced level of effort for both agencies, which has been recommended, and for municipalities, which has not. So let's keep going. I think think. What's next? Okay, and then we'll talk about this in more detail in a few minutes. The under-target request, the elimination of 282,000 from our target. First, just quick, the impacts of that, losing those funds in the 6.9% scenario. The agencies who took cuts will have be able to serve about 200 fewer youth next year. The and young people are going to lose jobs. The municipal jobs program that took the cut that took effect this year was temporarily sort of massaged at the local level with some backfilling of funding, but really if there is no county money and if municipalities didn't match it, we don't quite know what the effect will be. What we do know is young people, there are going to be fewer young people working next summer. There's a ripple effect that I didn't put up here, and that is that in many communities, those teenagers are hired to work in summer camps. The summer camps have health department regulations that require staff to camper ratios. And so some of the older teens who are hired in those summer camps help the local municipal camps or a camp like the Brooktondale Community Center or the Coddington Road Community Center meet their health department required staffing ratios. So if the young people aren't there to be assigned to those camps, the camps will cost more as they seek out, they have to raise fees to have enough money to pay their staff directly, which affects the lower income families in the community adversely as the cost of these primarily low income program or low cost programs need to escalate. The other impact, some of you remember that we had some one-time money for a shared van for municipal programs. That lease will be running out. And even though the county at this point, the tentative budget, recommends that $4,000 that is needed to maintain the county's share for 2011, even with everybody maintaining their budget, costs have gone up in ways that have caused the need for cost cutting in the same way that you've been seeing in county departments. The Ithaca Youth Bureau staff were putting together a budget, and there were some programs that had to come out, about 10 of them, and there's probably about 300 young people represented there, but they count by registrations in this particular instance. So we know that's about to happen. With the cuts to the not-for-profit agencies on that side of things, in combination, it's about a one FTE that we'll lose. And again, this is the third of a position that we know is coming, but not until that cut won't occur till probably 2012. And again, using the map, the same thing holds true. Each little icon is 10 people. The green ones are the municipal programs. The red ones are the agencies. This is a combination of some cuts at both the local community level and in the agencies. And I apologize for the X's not being that clear. But every X means 10 fewer kids getting service. Let's see. Okay. Now we're up to Part B. This is in addition to the 6.9% cut, the tentative budget calls for significant cuts to the target, to the department's base. So what does that look like? That, for us, we could have lived with the 6.9 budget. It had cutbacks, but it was a livable budget. For those who want to know where on the range from bone to cutting off limbs, probably 2011 in our 6.9% scenario was probably the last year we could have trimmed programs. We said that probably by 2012 whole programs would need to drop out or be reconfigured. But 2011 we could have lived with 6.9. Obviously, we're here tonight to talk about this other as well. So that 282 comes from two places. It completely, the 247 completely eliminates the municipal youth development system, which serves about 2,200 children. And then the $35,000 represents a 50% cut to the county funding going to the Learning Web. And that represents about 100 children, most of whom live in rural communities and most of whom are very at risk. They work closely with schools, helping kids to not drop out of school. Now, this I don't intend to walk all the way through. That's why I put it as a handout for you, because I wanted to unpack those amounts. And the fact is that the county does give money to each community. And so let me just use Dryden as an example. Skip down a couple lines to Dryden. That $30,000 figure from the county is matched by the Dryden municipalities, primarily the town of Dryden. Call it 31. So say there's a $62,000 budget that the volunteers on their youth commission then look at. What are the needs in our community and what types of services are most appropriate? They then make recommendations back to their town board. And in the case of Dryden, they recommend that a majority of their funds be used to contract with Cornell Cooperative Extension. And in the contract that they have with Cooperative Extension, there are really three types of costs covered in the contract between the municipality and Extension. That includes money to cover the salary and the very negligible fringe that is charged. And Linda or Janice, you'll correct me if I'm wrong here. Money for programming. I mean, if you're going to work with young people, you need some program supplies, including access to transportation if you need to transport them home at the end of a long, dark day. And then the third piece is a prorated, sort of a formula-driven administrative fee that helps to pay for, when you add up all the towns who are contracting with Extension, pays for about half the cost of Linda Schoeffel, who I really want to recognize as the coordinator of the Rural Youth Services System for Extension, does a fabulous job. She and a half-time assistant are responsible for supervising all the staff outstationed in all the communities, and they're trying to make program. They're working with the volunteers on the commissions to translate community priorities and yearnings into meaningful programs. And they are also doing a lot of the bookkeeping to help keep all those accounts straight. So those costs are partially paid for by the towns, but if you skip all the way down to the second from the bottom there, it says the CCE Rural Youth Services, that amount of $46,000 is an amount where the county directly contracts with Cooperative Extension to pay the other half of what is needed so that they can have their one-and-a-half coordinators, they can have some of the administrative backup and support that they need to be able to support the youth workers in each community. And I think it's important to know that the nature of this system is so locally controlled that although the employees, just as a sort of FYI, the employees may well be employed by Cooperative Extension, they are not just independently selected by Extension and assigned. Once a community identifies the type of programming they're interested in, Extension does all the proper and legal recruiting, searching, screening of talent pools, and then they sit together with the members of the youth commissions and our staff as well to sort of look together at who might be the best fit for that community. And so, and then all of the training support and the networking that happens at Cooperative Extension allows for a lot of synergy. So what you're seeing there are the staff really of Extension. And in one case, where is it? Yeah, in one case in the town of Ithaca, they do contract with Cooperative Extension, but they also choose to contract with the Learning Web for a very small customized component that is focused exclusively on service learning. So it's different from the countywide component. So in this budget, the Learning Web gets a $35,000 cut, which you see on the bottom line there, in its countywide programming, and it stands to lose all of its smaller contract that it has with the town of Ithaca to provide customized service. So they get a double whammy. But other communities use money to fund other things, but Extension is probably the largest. The city of Ithaca is very different altogether because it isn't rural, because it does have programs of its own and infrastructure. They have chosen, because it's up to a community to choose what it wants to do. They have chosen to use all the money available to them from the county and the city's match of that to directly hire teenagers. So the money is used for the salary and fringe to hire teenagers in the summertime through the city's municipal jobs program. So again, each community does it very differently, which makes it a little confusing for all of us who are close to it to explain to you who are not so close to it. Tell me in one soundbite what it is. But it adds up, the cuts add up to 282. And while if you're adding FTEs, the bottom number isn't FTEs, it is actually 16 different individuals who are in jobs with benefits now are likely to lose those jobs, be unemployed, may become our clients in other county-supported programs, and the number of kids affected is 2,300. So that's, I just wanted to sort of break it out about where it goes and what some of the local impact would be. And the programs, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the programs. We've been trying to educate people at different levels, and I think many of you have been actually hearing from the users of programs to say what they've done and how much it means to them. But the themes that cut across the programs, though they're different in every community, the themes are the same. They are engaging the hard to reach. They are all in all different programs, regardless of what it looks like. They're building social group work skills, building problem solving and leadership skills. And through the hiring, they're not only learning how to show up on time, be responsible workers, but they're usually in projects that are giving back to the community. And the magic happens when a positive adult is connecting with one or more young people. I mean, this program, like so many others, the program cost is the people. And the people are what make the difference. I'm going to indulge in just one quick story. We did share it at the Human Service Committee, but I was so struck by it when I heard it from Linda that they described a young man who was in a program, who, when they invited him to do to see if he wanted to work in one of their programs, when they had that program, he said, no, thanks. They asked about his career. He said, no, I don't need to worry about that. My family doesn't work. And he didn't mean they had a trust fund or owned an expensive company. This young man knew no one in his immediate family who had gone to work at a job and gotten paid. They said, well, that's all right. You know, do this volunteer thing with us. It'll be fun. Okay. And you want to do some work helping out with some landscaping? Oh, I guess. Other kids are doing it. I like the guy who I'll be working with. Sure, I'll do that. Well, little by little, this young man not only liked the rewards of a salary that you get from working, but like the sense of pride, the sense of accomplishment, and the sense of direction that he got about where his life could go if he paid attention to school and really was able to get a job that paid him the way he wanted. Right now, I think, Linda, he's working as a landscaper, is that?
In the summer.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, he is on his way, and, you know, in the great... All this, too often, I think we mistakenly draw a balance sheet and talk about the we who are fortunate on this side to have jobs and pay taxes and contribute to the community and talk about the they who are over there. But if you even want to work with that scheme, he just moved from this side as a user of public services, probably someone who might have been a TANF recipient, probably needed Section 8, probably on Medicaid, maybe in our jails, who knows, flipped over to this side, and as Charlie Evans, who used to sit right there, said, turned him into a future taxpayer. So that's just the one. Was that for me, Jim? I'm moving. The other component of the cut is the... Whoops. Sorry. Okay. The other component of the cut is the Learning Web's Career Exploration and Apprenticeship Program. Again, in the countywide program, as an agency, served 239 children and teens, most of whom were rural and at risk, and they stand to lose 100 kids across the county. So there were probably 10 different little red icons X out in the different communities as a consequence of this recommendation. So those are the pieces that comprise what would be lost in this. But just to run it down in terms of numbers for you, so we've got 2,200 losing service from the municipal programs, extension and other programs contracted by commissions, 100 by the youth, by the Learning Web, is about 2,300 would lose service under this. At 16-plus, we don't know. There are parts of people out there that are working who may either lose their jobs or lose some hours, but the 16 is firm. But then when you add to that the 199 that under the 6.9% scenario was going to have to cut back on the numbers of kids served because their budgets were cut, we're up to 2,500. And that doesn't count, and I haven't tried to itemize it too much more, but there were a series of 10 different programs I mentioned that the REC partnership would not be able to continue in 2011 just by virtue of revenue not keeping costs with pace with costs, and then fewer registrations there. And then what I did on this, and it, again, it's hard to read because I got our GIS folks to put little X's on each of those little green icons. So for every 10 kids, there's a little red, black X on it, but you can't really see it that well, so I put a big X on all of them because that's what we're talking about with the elimination of a program. And then we built in the county agency cuts on the red side. So that's what cuts look like. The biggest concern for us, and I'm sure is a concern for you too, is what happens to those unserved youth. We know that other agencies are cutting back and don't have a lot of capacity to serve them. We know, probably more than ever, you've heard as well as I, school budgets are contracted so that for the first time they're really cutting many more after-school programs, and some of the communities that have really for many, many years hung on to a late bus that allows kids to participate in after-school things are beginning to have to let those go. We know that out of the 2,300 kids who are being served, some of them come from families who can probably afford the fee-charging programs that might replace these. Most of the programs are no or low cost. They do charge some fees where it's appropriate, but it is not a high-fee program. And some families will have both the transportation and the flexible schedule and the money to make sure there are alternatives for their kids. But many, many, many of these kids are in the free and reduced lunch program. They're single parents or both parents are working two jobs to try to hold it together. So, but we do know that when they're home alone, I mean, the research from Fight Crimes Invest in Kids, which is actually an organization that of police officers, interestingly enough, law enforcement officers, formed an organization to focus on crime prevention. And they've done research, and when asked what they think would be most effective, they talk about after-school programs. But here's the reason why kids need them, to be supervised after school. And they are more, you know, I mean, you see it right there. They're four times more likely to commit a crime or to be a victim, even more likely to be a victim of a crime. And that's the piece that I think most people don't think about. You have this sort of like juvenile predator idea out there that they're going to, you know, run rampant and do terrible things. But they're actually as more likely to be a victim of a crime and or use drugs. So that's the program side, the kids side. I mean, I think we all know what it's like to worry about kids. But the other part, we tried to just do a little cost estimate and said, okay, so if there's 2,000 kids home alone and we got 2,000 worried parents, we might well have more worried parents than that, but let's just say 2,000. And say 3 days a week, they're going to spend about an hour in the afternoon saying, call me when you get off the bus so I know you're home. And then you take the second call that says, I'm hungry, what's there for a snack? And then there's, you know, they won't share the remote or the Nintendo with the sibling, and you're trying long distance to manage those kinds of things when your kids are home alone unsupervised. And it isn't because they don't care. It's because they can't be with them and there aren't alternatives. But what we did is say, okay, if 2,000 people are spending 1 hour a week, 1 hour a day, 3 days a week at an average salary, sort of what's it all roll up to, and it's a fair amount of money and lost productivity and distraction and upset. Now, this is also in your PowerPoint, but it's probably not that clear. I'm not going to run through all of it. But basically, I started at the top and said, okay, if we're eliminating the municipal youth service system and the cut to the learning web, and the potential is that we're going to have 2,000 unsupervised kids, what happens to them? And we took a conservative estimate, say, okay, you know, hopefully only 10% or 200 would get into some kind of trouble. Or need, and so if you go down the left side, maybe they're calling the police, either because they're in trouble themselves or because they've caused trouble, so somebody's calling about them. And the police are going to be making referrals to probation. And I think Patricia Buchel, in her presentation last week, told you that if these cuts are enacted and if the cuts in child welfare programs can't be restored, that she's going to see a lot more business at her door, and we foresee that as well. And then you've got some kids who would be having troubling behaviors that wouldn't necessarily take them into the courts but might need some of the DSS preventive services. And for now, at least in the tentative budget, that like step in the process is for many kids not no longer available. And so that might create like a chutes and ladders, quick step to foster care. And then the dropouts are going to need more of the programs, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the long and the short of it is between some jail time, some foster care, some TANF and Section 8, we could be looking at, for 40 kids, $780,000 in community expenses. What we're asking, and it's no surprise, we've been asking pretty loudly in lots of different ways, that by restoring the funds, you can, if we take the cost of $780 and subtract out the cost of $280 of paying for the programs, you probably save about $498. And you get to honor the county's 1988 policy commitment that I spoke of earlier, that it's a little askew there because that's how it's scanned, but you can do that. And you're faced, and I do not envy your choices, but as the policymakers for the county, your policy choice is go ahead and dismantle this intermunicipal collaboration, cut the programs, 2,300 kids will lose service. In doing so, you in effect take a vote to rescind the resolution creating the Municipal Youth Services Program. That comes with savings and it comes with costs. We'd ask you to consider developing an updated, more sustainable partnership that we all can be proud of, and it saves us some money. And when we do the math, depending on where you live in the county, it's maybe $6 to $7 more per year per household. It is not easy. We respect the care you're giving these deliberations, and this is the end of our presentation. Thank you for being attentive. Questions?
Yes, I have one yes. to start with. Nancy, one of your sheet that has how much each municipality contributes, mm-hmm. if the county funded the CCE part of it, the 46K, mm-hmm. and the towns funded that part, what would that mean for your budget? In other words, if they doubled up, if they funded what we normally do, and we funded the 46K to the cooperative extension, what would that mean for your budget?
Well, it would mean we'd have 46 in there and the rest is out. In terms of operation, I mean, we have had what I consider some very promising but early discussions with municipalities about that. I think what they have said to us is some are willing to step up more. But that increased contribution for them is to maintain a system that's a funding partnership where the county provides a core amount of funding. So I think they can increase. I don't know whether they will be able to take it all over. If they miraculously chose to levy all those funds and had that in their community, we would continue to be available to them to work with their commissions and help them make the choices that they need to make, whether it's to contract with Extension or other local programs. But at the moment in time, the indications I'm getting are that that's not likely. Did you want
to? I'm not going to argue that with you. My question was, we fund the 46.6K. Yep. They fund that. What does that mean for you? And I think I got an answer. Okay. Does anyone else have a question? No one? Thank you very much, Nancy.
That means you were very clear.
What?
It was.
Or you're very hungry.
I'm sorry?
There are no questions. It means she was very clear. Oh.
Jim, are we done until...
I think Carol's...
I guess so.
I have a question.
Yeah. We have another meeting on Tuesday. And do we have any catch-up to do? Any departments that didn't make it?
Traditional.
We have a meeting on Tuesday, and that is at 5 p.m., right?
Okay.
Okay. Carol.
I have a question about whether there's a preferred method or format for our resolutions.
Yeah, we will talk about that at the next meeting.
No free blueberry pie, my boss used to say.